Welcome to Dare to Green, a podcast with the business leaders who are decarbonizing our planet. I'm Leanna Fry. I am the founder and lead at GreenShot, an accelerator for climate entrepreneurs at Dartmouth College. I also teach several MBA classes on the topics of sustainability and climate innovation at the Tuck School of Business. Today, I'm talking with Sarah Jewett. Sarah is the VP of Strategy at Fervo Energy, which is an advanced geothermal company. Advanced geothermal has the potential to provide carbon-free energy 24/7. And this is important as our energy needs continue to grow. For example, AI uses 4 to 5 times as much energy as a standard Google query. Fervo Energy has a contract with Google to supply energy to one of their data centers, as well as the state of California. So let's jump into the conversation with Sarah and learn more. Sarah, I'm so delighted to have you on Dare to Green today. Where does this podcast find you?
Thanks. I'm really delighted to be here. Today, I am at our family farm in Central Texas. It's halfway between Houston and San Antonio, just about an hour south of you in Austin.
Tell us about Fervo, where you work to start off with.
For sure. So I work for Fervo Energy. We are sort of on the verge between being a startup and a full-blown company, and we call ourselves both, typically in different situations at this point in time. But we're a company who was started in 2017, and we exist for the purpose of building new geothermal power development.
Can you tell us a little more about that? It feels like geothermal works well in certain regions and not as well in others. And it would be lovely to hear if a little bit more about how it works and where it works well.
Definitely. So let's just zoom out really far out, really quick. There are multiple types of geothermal energy. You have large scale utility power, geothermal energy. You have direct use heating where you're pulling heat directly out of the earth and using it for a commercial or industrial system. And then you have heating and cooling on the residential or home level. And so today we're going to talk mostly about geothermal power development scale. Also, Fervo is starting to dip its toe into some of the direct use heating, but we do not do heating and cooling for home use. And so if you're listening to this podcast, that's not really what we're talking about. So geothermal energy has been around for a really long time, all three of those segments, but it is a portion of the energy industry that has neither grown super fast or seen that much large-scale innovation over the last 30 or 40 years that it's been in existence. You see the first geothermal energy in the United States in the 1890s in a direct use heating system in Boise, Idaho. So it's been around for a really long time, but it's not an industry that has really grown or changed in a meaningful way in the last 40 years.
Why is that?
Well, it's a good question. It's sort of a segment of the renewable industry that's felt a little bit left behind. There is a really obvious inflection point where the U.S. market embraced wind and solar power over the last 20 years as renewable energy started to get more and more popular. And at that time, geothermal energy was just more specific to the rocks below where it existed. It was more expensive and it just didn't take off quite the same way that wind and solar did. And so if you look at the market today, it's grown really, really slowly. And today only produces about 0.4% of U.S. power overall.
I want to talk more about Fervo Energy, but before we do, can you tell us what your role is there?
I am the Vice President of Strategy at Fervo Energy, and that encompasses a few different buckets. Underneath me, I have all of our policy and regulatory engagement, typical corporate strategy and corporate strategic planning. Some of that includes some behind-the-meter offtake business development, thinking about direct use heating and selling to direct air carbon capture and things like that. And then I run all of our people operations and human capital and all of our communications and PR.
Wow, that's a big portfolio.
Yes, it's diverse and fun. Keeps it interesting.
That's wonderful. Well, coming back to where you were going with Fervo, I've seen the recent contract with Google. You said you were kind of a startup, but you're getting to be a big company Can you tell us a little bit more about what Fervo is up to now and where the company is going?
Yeah, absolutely. So, the end of 2023, we brought on our first small-scale commercial and technical pilot. And so, what is that? We had a technology that sort of innovated on the geothermal energy industry. We deployed that at a really small scale at an existing geothermal power facility and then sold the power from it into the grid. And so, that was a project that we called Project Red. It was in North Central Nevada. We demonstrated that we could drill two horizontal wells and create a productive enhanced geothermal system under the surface of the earth, and then wheel the brine from that system to an existing geothermal power plant, generate electrons from it that we then sold to Google in the Nevada grid. And so that project started producing in 2023, proving that we could both build our technological design successfully and successfully sell into the commercial market at a competitive price point.
What a huge milestone.
Yeah, it was a really big deal for us. The success of that project unlocked a pretty big step change in our development. And today we're building the first two phases of what could ultimately become a 2 GW geothermal project in Southwest Utah. And that project will be a true greenfield where we own the leases, we build all the subsurface development, we build power plants, we tie into the grid, and we sell to large-scale commercial off-takers, in this case, utilities mostly.
So you've talked about locations in the central or western US. Does geothermal at the scale you're talking about work better there, or is that just where you're starting and it's just chance that they both happen to be in Utah and Nevada?
So geothermal energy relies on heat from the earth as its power source. And so when we look at the Western United States, the way plate tectonics are working in the Western United States is that they are extensional. They're sort of pulling apart. And in those extensional basins, you see high temperature rocks. This is oversimplifying, but sort of rising to the surface. And so in the Western United States, in these valleys between mountain ranges, you find high temperature rock close to the surface or close enough to the surface that we're capable of drilling in a cost-effective manner. And so the depth of those, is still deep to you and me. If we're thinking about walking down the street, our wells are, between 7,000 and 10,000 feet deep, and we're targeting roughly, between 400 and 400 degrees Fahrenheit rock at that depth. But if you go east, you'll find 400 to 450 degrees Fahrenheit rock much deeper. And so it just simply costs more to drill. And so it's the most cost-effective and economic place to extract large amount of heat is in the Western US.
Are the projects you're developing competitive with other forms of energy or cost competitive?
There are two ways we can sort of think about it. You can think about what is the demand for the product that we are building, and then what is the cost on an apples-to-apples basis. And the reason why I'm answering like this, which sounds a little bit like a hedge, is if you're thinking about the cost of wind and solar power, those are both intermittent renewable energy resources, meaning they produce some or part of the time, depending on when the sun is shining and when the wind is blowing. Geothermal energy is a consistent or 24/7 or base load or firm renewable energy resource, meaning that it produces around the clock because the earth never stops being hot. Lots of times we get compared on an LCOE or levelized cost of electricity basis, which doesn't take into account kind of the capacity of the power that we are putting onto the grid, which is a firm resource, much more akin to fossil fuels. Are we being compared on an apples-to-apples cost basis with, say, coal or nuclear or natural gas rather than wind or solar? And today we are pretty competitive with coal and nuclear. At this point in time, we're beating coal, we're beating nuclear, and we're coming up on the cost of natural gas. So I think it's getting better and better. And what you see when you look at the commercial market is that there is a very high demand for firm, clean energy resources, and the willingness to pay is much higher. And that's helping us deploy and helping our costs come down over time.
Yeah, it's really exciting. Like, what do you think the full potential could be?
Yeah, so the Department of Energy is expecting that somewhere between 20 and 30% of US electricity could come from geothermal energy over time. So it's much, much, I mean, the potential is massive here if we can crack the code to bringing costs down, making this a really repeatable approach to renewable power development.
So I'm going to circle back a little bit to come back to talk about your career journey. How did you come to work in climate, and how did you come to work at Fervo Energy?
Oh, a long circuitous story.
The best kind.
I spoke at Dartmouth a few months ago, as you know, and my advice to students was you sort of never end up where you plan to end up, but sometimes you get there. It just always ends up being more a more curlicue route than you perhaps expected. I graduated from Dartmouth in 2013 with a Bachelor's of the Arts and a Bachelor's of Engineering. And after that, I went out to work in the oil fields in the Western United States. And I signed up on a frac crew and was a field engineer for Schlumberger, which is a large oil field service company. And I lived in the oil fields. I worked a 15 and 6 shift, meaning 15 days on, 6 days off, and I would rotate between the day shift and the night shift and run my frac crew. And I did that for about 4 years before leaving the oil field, going to business school. I did another quick stint in oil field services in a corporate office before finding Fervo and taking a pretty crazy wild chance on joining a very early stage startup, because I wanted to get into the renewable energy industry.
I feel like there your path is very unique. Like, I don't know how many other Dartmouth grads could say that they worked out in the oil fields. I mean, maybe a few others, but it seems definitely a path less traveled.
I would say so. It was a bit of an odd move to leave, graduate with my Ivy League education and move to Rock Springs, Wyoming. Don a set of coveralls and live out of man camps for the next 4 years. So it was definitely a bit of an odd choice.
And then you said you came to Fervo Energy when it was very small. How big was it?
I joined Fervo as a consultant when there were six full-time employees and as the eighth overall full-time employee in 2020. I had met Tim Latimer, the CEO, and was very impressed with what he was trying to do. I had spent some time sort of doing research on the technology and the market, and I thought his idea was really interesting. I had never necessarily expected that I would leave a corporate oil and gas job to join a sort of wild idea startup. But I was really inspired by what Fervo was trying to do. I watched them execute on a pretty logistically challenging operation. And, I called Tim and I said, "Hey, what do you think about me working part-time as a consultant? And if you don't like the work that I do, you could just fire me at any moment." And he said, "That sounds pretty good." And he hired me as a part-time consultant for 10 hours a week.
That is a pretty incredible story. And I mean, Fervo's had such an amazing, and you've both had such an amazing trajectory. So it paid off.
It was a good idea, started at the right time, that we put really passionate, very stubborn people behind. And overall, it's gone quite well so far.
That's exciting. I want to talk a little bit about 2025, both for Fervo Energy and for you. And so maybe let's start with Fervo Energy. What's coming up in 2025? What are the big milestones that the company's trying to hit?
So today we are building what I mentioned could ultimately be a 2 gigawatt project. We so far have scoped phase one and phase two of this development. This project is called Cape Station, and it's in southwest Utah. And it is a greenfield geothermal power facility where we will be selling all of the electricity into the California market. So we'll be building all of these geothermal power facilities, then we'll be wheeling the power onto the grid in Utah, down to Nevada, and then across the border into California. Phase one of the project is fully in construction. We're actually almost finished drilling all of the wells for phase one, and we will finish those wells in 2025. 2025 is anticipated to come online for cold commissioning in early 2026. And so last time I was out in the field in early October, we were just clearing the dirt for our big, we'll build three power plants. And over 2025, we will see the entirety of those power plants be built in time for Q1 commissioning next year. And so it's going to be a very, very active year for Fervo at that site. The second phase is 400 megawatts. And so we will be making a lot of engineering, design, and construction decisions for that project and starting the construction in the field. And then we will look out to the market beyond Cape Station in Southwest Utah and start developing other projects elsewhere.
So it sounds very exciting. So I get a sense of the scale. You talked about how you did the milestone. You got one. You were selling power to the grid up and running. Like, how much bigger is what you're building in Utah, roughly? I don't know if there's a rule of thumb to kind of give us a sense of scale.
Yeah, so we built a 3-megawatt project in North Central Nevada, and we're building a 500-megawatt project in Southwestern Utah. So it's quite a bit larger.
Yeah. That's really helpful to have that direct comparison. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That is so exciting. Wow.
It is exciting and a bit terrifying and a bit crazy all at once.
Yeah. What about for you? What are some of your professional goals for 2025?
When I think about the year as a whole, you know, we've been working as a team for quite a bit of time on this first large development. And so much of this deal for the first development will go into the ground this year. And we are so focused on just making the right decisions to keep the project moving. There's massive, massive demand for what we're trying to build at this point in time. Data centers and AI have sort of blown up the world with, you know, threats or promises of the power demand that they'll need to multiply in the way that they want to. There is a pretty massive push for electrification, onshoring of manufacturing, cleaning of the grid, retiring of fossil fuels, all of these things that drive demand for firm, clean energy in a really meaningful way. And so it's really easy for us as a group that's actually putting steel in the ground for a firm, clean energy project to get distracted and get excited about all of this demand and all of these different, you know, demand drivers and pulls and look over here and try to build a project over here. And what about this? And so as a team, we've been really focused on trying to stay focused because we don't get to build projects 2 through 10 unless we execute on project 1. And so a lot of my professional goals are focused on executing at project 1 and then sort of, you know, keeping a peripheral eye trained on everything else that's happening and making sure we're setting ourselves up for best efforts of success in the future. In Q1 of this year, I'm actually having my first child. And so that is a big part of my personal and professional journey of 2025. And when you say goals for 2025, I'm like, oh, there's a big deer in the headlights moment coming for me.
I don't know. As a working mother, I think you're going to balance. I mean, it's going to be hard, but you're going to balance everything beautifully. I'm excited for what you're building personally and professionally.
Who knows what this journey is going to be like, but I'm excited to be joining you on it.
All right. Well, I have a final question to ask you, you know, since this podcast is all about how business can help in our decarbonization efforts, is there one thing you could do to make an impact on that front? Does anything come to mind?
I wonder if this answer is different across different sectors, but capital availability is really kind of the biggest pain point for new, promising, innovative technology that has the ability to decarbonize the grid. You know, the way capital availability works in the United States makes sense, but I think oftentimes we are observing capital going in large swaths to a certain technology that has, you know, a lot of promise and shine around it. And here we are building geothermal projects, and geothermal has been an industry that's been unpopular for a long period of time because of the drilling risk required to make it successful. And so we see a pretty severe dearth of capital availability in this industry. That sort of misses a recognition that there is a lot of innovation happening in this space, driven in large part by the shale revolution over the last 25 years, since the early 2000s, where we as a country have gotten really good at drilling wells and completing them. And it's a really good time for us to take that technology innovation and apply it to geothermal power and heat delivery development. But we are seeing, you know, a pretty tight market from a finance perspective. And it makes sense. But I think if I had a magic wand, I would increase capital availability for geothermal power development and help sort of accelerate the deployment of the industry.
Do you think part of that, you know, they call it first of a kind projects, where you've got a really innovative technology and you have to build this massive scale up in hardware, there's a gap in the market? Or do you think it's particular to some of the drilling risks in geothermal, or both?
I think it's probably both.
Yeah.
It's really hard to convince any investor that, hey, I know that, you know, the 10 people who've come before us have not shown a great ability for these projects to be successful, but our approach is different and our approach will be successful. And so you should invest in it, when a lot of the risk factors seem on the surface before going deep that, you know, they're the same. We're still drilling wells. We're still extracting heat from rock. We're still running steam through a turbine. I would say it's not necessarily, you know, that different probably from other large capital deployments. And then the second part of your question, geothermal does suffer from a particularly bad reputation, where old geothermal power developers used to kind of blindly poke holes in the earth to find a steam resource that had a pretty binary outcome of maybe or maybe not being able to pull steam out of the ground. What we are trying to convince the market of today is that it's a gradient of outcomes now that we're good at drilling and completing wells, not a binary outcome of whether it will or will not produce. You know, mm-hmm. We could see diminished wells from our forecast perhaps, but you know, we would just have to drill another well or two to achieve our forecast. And that is much more palatable and much more digestible to oil and gas investors, rather than, you know, we're going to go drill 10 wells and only 2/3 of them are going to be successful.
Thank you for going into more depth on that. This was amazing, Sarah. I'm so excited for you personally and professionally, and excited for Fervo Energy. So thank you for spending some time today.
Thank you so much. Thanks for thoughtful questions.
What a great conversation with Sarah. To wrap up this podcast, I have several takeaways. First, advanced geothermal has an important role to play in decarbonization. I was impressed with Sarah's statistic that it has the potential to shift from providing 0.4% of the U.S. energy needs to 20 to 30%. Second, having worked at many technology startups myself, I really admire Fervo's all-in commitment to focus on the Utah project in front of them and execute flawlessly before moving on to other priorities. And lastly, I appreciate how Sarah and the Fervo team are applying their oil and gas experience to advanced geothermal. Instead of seeing the world as an oil and gas versus renewable zero-sum game, they are taking the approach of how do we learn from the current system to make the green transition faster. Looking forward, I am excited for next week, where I'll interview Andrew Marino, a partner at Summa Equity. Summa Equity is a venture capital fund out of Sweden. They invest thematically in sustainability. So please join me next week for the conversation with Andrew. What a great conversation with Sarah. To wrap up this podcast, I have a few takeaways. Advanced geothermal can play an important role in decarbonization. I was impressed with Sarah's stats that has the potential to shift from providing 0.4% of the US energy needs to 20 to 30%. Having worked at multiple technology startups myself, I admire Fervo's all-in commitment to focus on the Utah project in front of them and execute flawlessly before getting distracted with other opportunities. And finally, I appreciate how Sarah and the Fervo Energy team are applying their oil and gas experience to advanced geothermal. Instead of seeing the world as an oil and gas versus renewable zero-sum game, they are saying, how do we learn from the current system to make the transition to a green economy faster? Looking forward, please join me for the next episode of Dare to Green, where I interview Andrew Marino. Andrew is a partner at Summa Equity, a venture capital fund out of Sweden. They invest in sustainability. Please join me for the conversation.